Hello, you're listening to Teenagers Untangled, an audio hug for parents going through the teenage years. I'm Rachel Richards, former BBC correspondent, parenting coach, mother of two teenagers and two older stepdaughters.
Hi, I'm Susie Asley, mindfulness coach, psychotherapist and musician, and mother of three teenagers. Two of them are twins.
Now, if you're not familiar with our format, we pick questions that have been raised by listeners or that we've come across day to day, and I research what the experts have to say on the matter. Susie, who spends her working life helping teenagers and adults manage their issues using a mindfulness approach, gives us her own perspective and some excellent tips on calming our fears. Now, both of us are doing this in our spare time and learning a huge amount ourselves. We'll talk later about Sarah's issue. She's coping with a change in home circumstances because of a sharp rise in the cost of property in the place where she lives. I'm sure it's an increasingly common problem at the moment because of the cost of living crisis. We'll talk about managing your own emotions as well as those of your teenager. Firstly, we have a great question posted anonymously this time. How do you handle dress codes with your teenage daughter? The fashion trends these days seem to be as naked as possible. Am I the only one that doesn't want my daughter to wear shirts the size of a bra and shorts that are so short they look like underwear?
What a minefield.
What a minefield. Do you know what's really funny is I asked my big girls, I call them my biggest, my bonus daughters who were with us this weekend, what they thought. Because I thought, well, this is an interesting one.
And how old are they again?
27 and 24. Five. Right. So the 27-year-old's about to be 28. Mm. And both very well established in their careers. And they both do wear very skimpy outfits when they go out. They really challenge, they push the boundaries in terms of what they'll put on social media. But they have private accounts. And I was curious. But what was really interesting is they sort of backed away from it a bit and said, well, it's really difficult. And the younger one said, actually, she cringes when she sees teenage schoolgirls wearing over the knee socks and very short skirts and lots of makeup. And I said, well, why is that? And she said, oh, because, you know, it's just really hypersexual and it just feels really wrong. And I thought, gosh, you know, what's really interesting is that was her when she was that age. And what it made me realize was that there is a kind of tipping point where they become more aware of what the signals are that are being sent out.
They have no
idea.
And
why they might be awkward.
They have no idea, age 14, 15, what signals they potentially are sending out. It's just what they like to wear.
So it's a really, and it's a minefield, as you say. And I, you know, as a parent of four daughters. And my husband just doesn't want to look. He doesn't want to go there. He's still like, I'm not, although he will... You know, when my daughter's wearing a crop top, he'll say, look, you're going to be too cold. He will, he won't make comments about the sexuality of whatever they're wearing. It's always about, you know, that is too cold for that. Which is actually...
It's quite smart.
I admire
it's
him for that.
It's such a hard topic, though.
So it's a really interesting one because, you know, a large part of the transition from childhood to adolescence is really difficult. And to be fair, this is one of... one of the few areas, I'm trying to think of other ones, where they can really have fun and experiment and express themselves.
It's a bit like we talked about the, you know, the piercing and the hair and all of that. It's self-expression, and that they should be able to just express, especially in this country where we wear school uniform. They don't have that much opportunity to
really go
nuts. It's really important, and it's... You know, a lot of our own fears we project onto them, and we want them to be safe, et cetera, et cetera. And where's the boundary and all of that? It's hard.
What you've said is really valuable because it's how do we feel about this? We need to unpack how we think and feel about these things before we have conversations with our teenage girls about it. I mean, I'm sure it's all come out. I'm sure our teenage girls quite quickly pick up on what we think because it's sort of hardwired into us from our own social. You know, clothes are incredibly complicated. They're sending out messages and they're part of a society and a social message.
And they just want to, I mean, not all of them, but they want to look the same. They're this, we've spoken about it before, this herd mentality that gets increased at teenage years. They want to fit in, and clothes are a huge bonding thing. You know, if you look the same, then you're part of the gang.
You're part of the gang.
And if you don't, and your mum's going, you're not allowed to wear that because it's whatever, then that's really hard for them because they might not be accepted in their heads.
Yes, absolutely. So coming back to our own opinions about things, stop for a second and listen to this. I'm going to read out some clothes. I'm just coming off the top of my head. Cool. And think about who might be wearing them.
Right.
Floral dress. Mini skirt. Headscarf, trouser suit. Mm. You know, when you hear these things, they're going to have images for you. They're going to be certain types of people who you think would wear those things.
Yeah, that's really interesting exercise. I had very clear pictures in my head.
Yeah, and me too. Mm. And then they flip because I think, oh, actually, because, you know, like a headscarf, is that something that would have been worn by Jackie O? Or are we talking about a headscarf that's been worn by a Muslim? Yeah. Or are we talking, you know, so you, there are lots of little nuances about clothing, but clothing is the signal. Yeah. So first, what we have to do is we have to, I don't know, explore your own values about clothing and what we feel we think people should wear and then why.
Yeah.
And why do you, why do we think that? And so here's an example. A friend of mine was with me and she started derobing. We were going to go swimming and she said, I'm wearing a bikini. I'm sorry. And I said, why are you sorry? And she said, and this is an absolutely gorgeous woman. Yeah. And she said, oh, you know, I guess because maybe I shouldn't really be wearing them anymore. And I said, okay, I'm still lost. And she said, well, you know, like my husband said, maybe my bikini wearing days are over. Okay. If he'd been there, I probably would have marched up to him and slapped him right then. Yeah. But, this is a world she's living in, and these are values that she's taken in. Mm. And my attitude is basically a bikini body is a body you put a bikini on.
Yes.
And it sort of upsets me that people feel trapped in this environment where they think that, you know, you get to a certain age or you look a certain way. And, you know, my attitude is, well, you know, your husband who said that, so he's maybe putting on a bit of weight and he's getting a bit more wrinkly. Have you explained to him that he needs to put a shirt on?
Wear a onesie.
Yeah. Can we not see your chest? You've got a bit of white chest hair. Can we cover that up, please? It doesn't happen, right?
Nope.
It's really weird. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. So
it's an opportunity though, isn't it? Like in all areas of parenting to stop and go, okay, what are my values? And are they just ones I've adopted from the previous generation, the media, my neighbours, the school, or are they my own?
And am I trapped? I mean, that's one of the amazing things about having teenagers and doing this podcast is I'm having to think about things where sometimes I thought, oh, I feel a bit uncomfortable about that and I'm not quite sure why. Yeah. And being able to address it and saying, okay, I'm not going to be trapped by that. Yeah. That's just not a valid thing to think about anymore.
No, I call it like with mindfulness awareness, like every time I feel icky, like this kind of icky feeling, okay, well, then that's an opportunity to, what's that?
Yes.
Become curious. What is that? Why do I feel icky about that? What's the resistance in there? And I think a lot of things with clothes, and I've definitely felt it, still feel it. I have a daughter. It's fear-based, isn't it? But what is the fear? Fear is a huge topic. You know, is it fear of what others might think? Is it actual fear of her personal safety going out in looking a particular way? Is it fear of what people think of my parenting? Is it fear of, I don't know, there are a million different things. So it's really looking into the nitty-gritty of sitting with that icky feeling, which we don't really like. What's going on?
Well, it's a signal, isn't it? To tell us to have a think. So, you know, talking with your teens about the styles and types of clothes they want to wear is actually can be a really fun way of showing your interest in their world. So, and it will also save you money ostensibly from buying them things that they don't want to wear. Negative attacks on clothes and choices will definitely feel very personal to them because they're experimenting. And, you know, if you take it, if you really stand back and look at it, you've had this entire era where you have been in control of their clothes. Now, they might have said, I'm not having that because it's got a label in it or whatever. But the truth is you were in charge. Mm. They become teenagers and there's a transition. And so this is the real time when they get to step away from that. But they don't really know what these clothes mean. Yeah. They weren't born in a, you know, fully formed in terms of understanding all the social cues. So the great thing you can do is you can stick to concrete facts. So are you not going to be too cold in that? I think you're going to be too cold in that. Mm. Possibly be, you know, they probably say, no, I'm going to be fine. That's okay. But, you know, stick to concrete facts. The value judgments like you look slutty.
Yeah, no.
Never go there. Never go there. Okay. Now, the problem we've got at the moment is the prevailing argument, which is coming back to what this poor lady has said. Oh, you know, they're wearing these no clothes. Yeah. The prevailing argument is that a girl's right has a right to wear whatever she wants and it's no one else's business. This is a Kim Kardashian thing that's perpetuated by a lot of other people. Yeah. And I have some sympathy for that to an extent, but we need to unpack that with our teenagers and really inspect the truth of it.
Yeah, we need a discussion about it, don't we? Because yes, in theory, in an ideal world, that however, they live in a society where, you know, you don't want them to meet things that will be really challenging and difficult and make them vulnerable.
Sure.
But yes,
so so it's about, you know, talking to your child is having to go from you constructing their outfits for different day-to-day weather to them having to do that. Mm. There's learning what's in or out of season, balancing comfort with style, you know, developing a love for fashion and, you know, what is your own style? So along that way, you're going to have a lot of hurdles and you're going to make some mistakes.
Gosh,
fine.
I can't remember when I picked my daughter's outfits. I think she was about 5. That's a whole different story.
So now the thing to do is sit down with your daughter. And well, this is one approach. This is the approach that I've come up with that I think actually is the, it's not just me, it's with this research I've read.
Yeah.
That is a really effective way of doing this and a fun way of doing it. Go and look at some magazines, teenage magazines of fashion. You can look at Vogue. My older daughter is very keen on Vogue or TikTok. Anything that they're, where is their world? Let's go and have a look at their world. So keep the conversation playful. Look at who they're following and say, right, so what do you think of those clothes? Just genuinely ask them, what do you like about them? What do you dislike? You know, would you wear those clothes? What activities do you think that person can do in those clothes? Can they run, can they run in those clothes? Can they go out to the shops in those clothes? Could they go and see their grandma in those clothes? What, you know, just talking about context. And then inspiration. So say, well, what do you find? What do you like? Colors? Do you like floral prints? Do you like checks? Do you like it? You know, just trying to pin down what, you know, get them to do a Pinterest board, for example. You know, what are the style things? Yeah. What are your icons and what things really matter to you? Do you like a midriff? Do you like, you know, just going through this process will, and what will be great about it is you'll have the opportunity to explore their feelings about their own body. Because actually talking to teenage girls about their own body can be fraught with difficulties. Yeah. So for example, one of my daughters fixated on her waist and it gave me, I didn't know that that was a thing for her. And I said to her, don't pick one part of your body and just say that that's wrong, because that's not what people are seeing. Yeah. And we sat down and really talked it through. And since then, since she's understood that actually people don't look at teenagers get very fixated on one little thing that they think is wrong, but they don't realize that people don't see all of that. They don't see the thing, they see an entire person.
Yeah,
it's comforted her.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really good awareness, isn't it? A great opportunity to find those things out. Clothes should be fun. It's self-expression. It's, you know, what do you want to wear today? And you might not want to wear that tomorrow, you know. And it doesn't have, you know, you can go to charity shops. My daughter loves charity shops and tries on all sorts of weird and wonderful things. We went into a shop, I think it was Urban Outfitters, where they have like an open changing room. And I said, all right, let's play a game. Let's, you pick me an outfit that I have to put on.
Oh, I love this.
And I'll pick you an outfit that you have to wear, like pretty outrageous one. And then we have to take a photo of ourselves. It was so much fun. The thing is, she picked this like psychedelic tight awful dress for me and this big brown jumper that I wore, and I looked absolutely dreadful in it. And I picked her this really bright yellow, quite ugly, shiny dress and a fluffy lime green little cardigan.
Amazing.
She looked amazing.
Oh, like, I suspect your daughter,
how do you look amazing in that outfit? But it was so much fun. And you know, then we just put them back.
I love that. What an amazing idea. Yeah. Just to being able to go and have a little experiment. Well, you could do that even if you can't go to the shops. You can do that with your wardrobe or with, you know.
Yeah.
And but actually they can also make you feel they sort of make a statement about you that can be the thing that you'd like to be but that you don't feel you can own on a day-to-day basis. That's what I used to do when I was a teenager. I'd go out to parties and I would wear the wildest. I'd have my hair back combed and it would be up. This is more kind of, you know, I was an 80s kid. And, you know, I would experiment with clothes. Yeah. And then I'd go back to school and I'd be this meek person that wouldn't talk to anyone. And people would go, who is that?
Amazing. That's amazing.
Because you can actually put on a mask.
Yes.
And have fun with it. So again, and I used to wear clothes like I'd wear a Laura Ashley, horrible Laura Ashley floral dress that I loved, and Doc Martin boots. And it would just infuriate my father.
Yeah.
And I would do it because it would infuriate my father. And it was sort of playing with tropes and making, I'm sure I looked awful, to be frank.
Who cares? It's like an experiment.
Just having fun.
Yeah, experimenting with who they are, because that's exactly what they're doing as teenagers. They're experimenting with who they are, and how you look is a massive part of that. You know, dressing up. Halloween's a big thing, isn't it, for teenagers? They love it. They love dressing up.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's why it's become so popular, because it is the whole...
Yeah.
And then talking about sexism and unfairness in dress codes, because I think it's very important to acknowledge that the way that girls are being told is a good way to dress then gets punished. Mm. So we are constantly being told as females that to be a successful female is your highly sexual object. You know, you look this certain way, particularly if you're a teenager, maybe not someone my age, because no one really cares. But when you're a teenager and then you do that, and then you're punished for it.
Yeah.
Because people say, oh, well, look, she's so slutty. And these girls can't win.
Yeah.
So don't punish girls for doing being successful at what it is that society's telling them they should be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really tricky, isn't it? I guess it's at the end of the day, it's having a conversation so they have this awareness that, you know, rightly or wrongly, whether we like it or not, some things are picked up, signals are picked up in society, and so that they know, so that then they're making a choice rather than just blindly going into it, because they don't realize what their signals are sending out. And, you know, they don't have to change the way they are, but if they have an awareness, they can choose it.
I love that. That's the most important point, is that actually I think for the most part, they don't necessarily know, and you telling them something that's quite aggressive isn't going to help them learn. So explaining to them the context of the world that they're living and how those things might come across, and actually giving them the chance to read another person. So, you know, first of all, what do you like doing? Are you sporty? Are you what? And does the clothing you're wearing tell people that? You know, and does that matter? So you might think, I'm a really sporty person, but when I go out I want to look completely different. That's fine. So what it's all about, just saying to them, so when you're putting clothes on, what you are doing is you're saying something, whether you like it or not. If you're just wearing a baggy t-shirt, you're still saying something, because you're saying, I don't care. So it's really important for them to get a sense of, okay, I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to say, you know.
Yeah, without being obsessive about it, without making it into a bigger deal than, you know, it needs to be, but that there is this awareness around it.
And the reason, apart from just being offensive, for not calling a girl something offensive, you know, which saying, oh, that looks too slutty, for example, I keep using that word, is, you know, if you think, oh, they're really, that's a bit hypersexual, they probably are exploring their sexuality. They've got this amazing new power bomb.
And they probably look amazing.
They look amazing. And that's the thing. So I look at my older daughter, who's now bought herself a super short dress. She never did in the past, but she bought it. And I just thought, oh, wow. Because she's at an age now where I think she understands enough about what she's doing and how she's coming across. And it's a party dress. And wow, her legs are amazing. And I wish when I was her age, I felt that confident with my legs.
Yes, it's confidence, isn't it? And it's feeling confidence. Feeling comfortable in their skins, feeling okay with how they look, how they feel. That has to be the main part of all of this. And it's just a form of expression that we don't want to shame them for any of it, because they're so vulnerable at this age that any tiny comment, and it doesn't have to even be from somebody they're particularly close to, but any tiny comment about how they look, if they'd be feeling vulnerable that day, that can really sit with them for years. So we have to put kid gloves on for this topic, I think, and try and make it really fun and normal.
And if they have the backing of their family, yeah, you go, yeah, you're great, you experiment. Then actually those little comments that might come from someone else will be less painful, and less they won't hit home in quite the same way. So that's it's a defense. But actually just talking to them and just saying, you know, this is empowering.
Yeah.
When you walk into a room, we all know that when a woman walks into a room and she's looking amazing, everyone's looking at the woman, which can be incredibly empowering, but it can also be off-putting for some other women who feel put down by it. Yeah. So it's about sort of just, again, just saying, you know, understand that that's the power you have when you walk into a room. Feel good about it.
Yeah.
Be aware.
Yeah, and the body image for you know, for women who or girls who don't maybe feel so great in their skin, or they feel they'd like to look a different way, it can be really triggering for them. Mm. So it's helping them, you know, how do you feel in this outfit? Or how do you want to feel?
Yes. No, I think that's really right. How do you want to feel? What are you trying to say to yourself? Yeah. How do you, you know, make yourself feel good? And context, once again, just giving them a broader, people who say, I can wear whatever I want and it's nobody else's business. Yeah. What they're really demonstrating is a lack of understanding of society and context. Mm. And so, for example, my oldest, she came to stay with us and we were going to lunch with her great grandmother. So you can imagine she went through the war, wonderful, fun, sparkling woman. But my bonus daughter came out with her a very, very, very short skirt on. And I said, "Ooh, so that's a no." And she just looked a bit struck and said, what do you mean? And I said, that skirt, gorgeous legs, you know, you look great, but you're not wearing that to go and see your great grandmother. And she went, well, why not? And I said, well, because it's not appropriate. Mm. It's not, what you're doing is you're not showing respect for her generation. They wouldn't have worn that. That's not really, and you have to be conscious of the impression you're trying to give her.
Yeah.
And it's disrespectful to her.
Yeah.
So she said, well, that's all I've got. And I said, great, come and have a look in my wardrobe. You can wear anything in that. So she picked something out. She didn't fight. It wasn't fraught with emotion. It was just what you have to understand about this particular context is that that's not the right dress.
Yeah. And I think that's a really useful message, that context, because that's really understandable, isn't it? I stumbled a little bit with this subject when my daughter was first a teenager, or maybe still, you know, preteens, and suddenly they were all wearing, you know, crop tops and tiny shorts, and I was like, whoa, I don't know how to do this. Where's the book? And we had conversations about it, and I could feel it was going the wrong way. It was like I was making more of a deal about it than it needed to be, and also because I wasn't clear myself. I was fumbling about in it, and we came to, I can't remember what compromise was. Anyway, it worked out. It was fine. We talked about it, but I think we have to be sure we're not making more of a deal about it than it needs to be, also taking it up. And I don't really comment on her outfits about that kind of thing anymore, but it's a bit of a minefield if we're not careful.
Yeah, I mean, the less said, the better. Yeah. But, and when you do say things, having conversations that are light and, you know, just helping them understand.
Yeah. And I love the idea of teaching them, though, that it can be really empowering. I think that's really helpful.
But it is. And one of the things that I think has made a big difference with my girls, and they both say they love it, is when I gave them both an allowance. And I've talked about that. I think it was episode Parenting Tips 4. And the reason it's so wonderful, and it came up again the other weekend, was when my older daughter said, you know what, mummy, such and such as mum bought her a dress and she doesn't really like it. Mm. And it's really expensive. And now she feels awful. Mm. And it's just a horrible, you know, horrible situation. And she said, I'm so, so grateful that you have given us an allowance, which is the money you would have spent anyway, so that I can then go and buy things that I think suit me and that fit with the thing I want to do.
Yeah.
And I felt great about that. My other daughter mostly spends her money on fixing her phone screen. She doesn't have a really big wardrobe, but she's now so started, literally a year in, she started saying, actually, I think I just keep wasting my money. And I went, possibly. Yeah. And then she said, I think I'm going to save for I really like these cargo pants, but they look really expensive. And I said, they're not that expensive.
Yeah.
And she saved and bought them. Brilliant. And she said, wow, this is great. I love these.
Yeah.
And I said, and also every time you wear them, you can feel good that you save for them and they're yours.
They're
and
special.
It's all about you.
Yeah.
It's your it's something, and that helped her to focus on, okay, what do I really want?
Yeah.
What do I like? Do I like this more than really this? Important. Who am I trying to be?
Yeah, that's really important.
And we always do a little warning because sometimes these things can be a problem. And so the clothing becomes a big thing, or they become highly preoccupied with their appearance, you know, body image, any of this stuff. They could be verging on body dysmorphia or in that area. Mm. So it is something to have a little, keep an eye out for, because if you start thinking this is becoming obsessive, that's the time to step in and have those conversations and think, is this, have we got too much? Have we got too obsessed with this?
Yeah, if they're, you know, really worrying about how they look all the time, that's not good.
So the answer is basically have fun with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about Sarah's situation, but first I really wanted to highlight some feedback we received last week. Alexandra Brown, who lives in Paris, sent us the most wonderful email. She's told us that she doesn't mind being identified. So, Susie, perhaps you could read it out.
So, really lovely feedback from her. It says, "Hello, I live in Paris and discovered your podcast yesterday. I was looking for a pick-me-up after my 13-year-old daughter left for a week at her dad's place, and our week together had been particularly tense and difficult. I cannot stop listening to you. Firstly, your voices are so soothing and reassuring. It feels as if listening to a friend saying, 'I hear you, everything will be all right. Just be kind to yourself.'" Oh, what a lovely thing to say.
Amazing.
"But most importantly, every piece of advice you give resonates so much with me. Every time you say something, I can't help myself. 'Wow, that's amazing. I need to try this. It makes so much sense.' I've actually started taking notes in a brand new little notebook I was keeping for a special occasion." Wow. "So from the bottom of my heart, and probably soon from my daughter's and the rest of my family's, thank you so much. You sound like two amazing human beings, and your children are really lucky to have you as their mums."
That's very moving. And I tell my children that every day. I do. My children grew up with me saying, "And I'm the best mummy in the world."
Brilliant. Hey, can I print that out? Have it on the wall at home.
I did. I said to my girls, "You're going to have to remember this when you really hate me. Just remember. Just remember."
Do you remember what Alexandra in Paris thinks?
Yeah, you may think I'm horrible. But I can relate to that, Alexandra. I actually have a notebook, and Susie's seen my special notebook, and I take notes too. So it's a great thing to do, because otherwise you sort of, they just get lost, don't they? These little tips. Now for our next topic. Sarah has had to deal with a change in circumstances. A housing crisis where she lives has meant she's had to downsize, and she feels it's impacted on her teens. So I looked into just what are the facts behind this, and a recent survey by the Yorkshire Building Society has found that more than 9 in 10, so 90% of 11 to 18 year olds are aware of the cost of living crisis. In another survey, 51% of children and young people said money worries had made them feel angry, unhappy, negative, anxious or stressed in the last 3 months. And NHS figures also show that children living in homes that have fallen behind in bills are more likely to develop mental health problems. Now, the child psychologist, Dr. Elizabeth Kilby, says children don't necessarily worry about money. It's they absorb their parents' concerns around the subject, particularly when they're treated as a taboo.
Yeah, I mean, children are sponges. Mm. They pick up on absolutely everything, even the stuff we're hiding. They mirror everything. They pick up on all of it. And, you know, there's no judgment there at all, because having a change in financial situation, a big one, or even not a big one, can be really challenging and really, really painful, because it's not just necessarily the money, is it? It's the whole, you know, maybe a shift in circumstances, a shift in home, in you know, all the things that are connected with that. It can be seismic, and that can be really difficult to process for anybody. So, of course, you know, like divorce, it's like a big, it could be a big, might not be, but it could be. And the child will pick up on the stress, the worry, and the preemptive stress of not being able to pay the bills, if that's been the case. And they will pick up on that. And that will go directly into their nervous system, not necessarily even through their conscious brain. It goes into, they mirror our nervous system.
That's a really interesting point. So it's actually sort of inside you rather than necessarily conscious. And so the truth is, if something like that is happening or has happened, regardless of how big it is, the first thing we have to do is deal with our own feelings, which can be dramatic and very painful. And actually, in this particular scenario, it may not be as big as grief, but it will be a form of grief. So you may find that, okay, you picture yourself in this way and now you've lost that. So it can be to do with, you know, your college savings have gone, your house has gone, your life script, your life script, like who am I, becomes challenged. Yeah. And this alteration of your life script can mean that it magnifies your feelings about that financial change of circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's you know, comparative to any big change, you know, it is a form of grief. It's a loss. And, you know, we're not always great at dealing with loss in our society. It is a form of loss, like divorce is loss, you know.
And the problem with this type of grief is, so for example, with divorce, people know what divorce is and you can talk about it to an extent. True. And grief when you lose someone, we've just had the royal funeral and it was just extraordinary. And people have a lot of rituals around grief. This form of grief is very difficult because there's the embarrassment, loss of identity, feelings of betrayal, because maybe, you know, for example, if the housing market has changed and somebody said, right, we want our house back because, you know, I want to sell it on, and you just in this house saying, but this is my home. And you don't have any choices over it. And because it's not acknowledged as something that we should be grieving, where you think, well, I shouldn't be upset because it's not as bad as, you know, no one died. But it's a different thing. So with this lack of social ritual for this form of grief can make it much harder to process.
So we have to be more conscious in allowing and giving space to the feelings that may come up. They may not, but they may come up like a feeling of mourning or something almost.
The first thing is all about, you know, surviving this situation is all about acceptance, accepting the fact that things have changed, honouring the way you feel about it, and, you know, fighting for the future rather than staying with what's happened. So there was a man called Viktor Frankl who championed this idea after returning home from three horrific years in Nazi death camps. And he discovered that even though he couldn't go back to the life he'd had before, which was obviously what he would have liked to have had, he realized that he could find new love. He could, you know, have become a father again, or he could, you know, he started looking to the future and found that this optimism was the thing that carried him through.
He was amazing. He was all about, you know, choosing. You can't always choose your circumstances, but you can, you know, choose how you
respond
react
to them.
How you respond to them.
And the same with Edith Egger, who again, The Choice,
amazing.
An amazing book and a really, really powerful message for us.
And it's not belittling anything that people have gone through, because we have to give space to anything that comes up, but it's a really lovely opportunity to sort of question, you know, what do I think about? What are my values? Because the teenagers will pick up on the wobble. And it's the idea that, you know, we don't like uncertainty as human beings. We hate it. We've talked about this lots of times. We don't like uncertainty. We like to know. We like the familiar. Even when we know it's bad for us, we'll pick the familiar.
And I love your point about uncertainty, because we talked about this in our discussion about future careers. And the truth is, we need to become more capable of coping with uncertainty than we ever have done in the past, where people want certainty, but the truth is the world is becoming more and more uncertain. So building techniques for coping with, you know, instability are really important. So for example, in the late 1970s, a researcher at the University of Chicago named Salvatore Madi began studying employees at Illinois Bell. Some managers had trouble coping with change, others thrived. And what separated the two groups? The adaptive leaders chose to view all changes, whether they wanted them or not, as an unexpected part of a human experience, rather than a tragic anomaly. So if we can actually adjust the way that we look at our lives, and rather than think, you know, I'm building, and I'm on strong foundations and I've got to stay where I am. If we can say, okay, well, things change. Right. So I need to adapt. How do I adapt? Yes. And show that, demonstrate that to our kids.
Change is the only constant.
It's the only constant.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Change is the only constant in life. And if we can really, really accept that, even when it's hard, and that doesn't mean we have to go, yay, when a change isn't nice. But if we have that basic understanding or basic expectation that there will be change, then it's easier to manage when change arises.
Yes, and not stressing about being stressed, because when it's the feelings about stress can cause more stress. So actually saying, okay, the stress is signaling something. Yeah. What is it signaling? Yeah. What can I make from this? And take the power back. So talking about your feelings in relation to the financial loss actually takes the power away from some of the dark, deep secret. Yes. It needs to have some air.
And it's not belittling. I mean, it's really stressful. Like, it's really stressful if you can't pay your bills. Stressful. It's really stressful if you're wondering whether you can feed your kids. It's really stressful. So that's not, you know, belittling any of that.
No.
But, you know, taking care of yourself in that, because, you know, the kids will pick up on it. And they are also able to manage some of that too. But teaching them to sit with discomfort is a big part of what I do with teenagers. I teach a course, and one of the things which always horrifies people is they have to hold an electric shock ball. And the point of, they think it's hilarious and fun, but the point of that is it's like he sends out random, very small shocks. I'm not taking anyone's hair out or anything, but they have to hold this ball and it gives out random shocks. And the idea is that they learn to stand in a big group, they're squealing and going, what's it like? What does it feel in your body that something weird's about to happen, and then you're going to do it, and then afterwards it passes, that you can sit with discomfort. It's such a great thing.
And
to
then
teach
you can
kids.
Look back on it and think that was temporary.
It was temporary.
Because I think actually when you become an adult, one thing we need to try and remember is the times in the past when we have coped, when things have been felt catastrophic. And you know, I imagine that we all go through these at some point. I certainly have. And I draw strength from the times when I look back and think, you know what, I thought my world was ending. And it didn't. The problem is the teenager hasn't probably experienced those things, so this might be the first time, and you need to draw on experiences that you've had where you can say, do you know what, I really thought that was the end of things.
That's a really good point. To show them that it's a passing phase, and it maybe it's a long phase, but it will pass like everything
does. And then the next thing is thinking, okay, what can I learn from this? Like you mentioned, it's about sort of adjusting. Okay, if I learn that all I care about is money, well, that's, you know, I guess that's it. But actually the truth is most people care about other things. What makes us feel good about ourselves. I think we did this in one of our previous episodes, is connection and relationships. And that actually is fundamentally what gives people self-esteem. And so the problem is when you lose your situation, like the home or something, and then it takes away, strips you of the people who matter to you, then that becomes devastating. But if you can keep the people around you, including your family, and building family relationships around going for walks, not going to the cinema, for example, you know, if you're having to pare back, finding ways where you as a family can do more things together that are fun, that aren't based on money, it can completely adjust the situation, the way you're looking at it. It's hard. Gratitude journal. You've talked about gratitude journals before. You know, just realizing that, okay, well, you know, what one thing can I be happy for?
And practicing. Sort of looking at stress levels as well, because it's, you know, as you just said, it can be really stressful wondering how you're going to pay the bill, or how you're going to, you know, your kids' feet have grown and you can't afford any new shoes or something like that. You know, it's really stressful. And, you know, how can we manage stress in that situation? Really hard.
Really hard. So if you're going to, we've talked about how you deal with it as a person who's having to cope with this, and then you've got to talk to your teen. So how do you talk to your teen about it? Well, to begin with, you need to think, okay, I'm not just going to blurt it out, you know, at a point when we're just doing the washing up or something. So no, think about what you feel comfortable sharing. What should the teenager be in on? Make a plan, prepare yourself for the likely questions that they might have. Think positively about it. So this stuff we've just been saying, you need to do some of that for yourself first before you can explain it to the teenager and be positive for them. Create a safe space, and then try and orient this discussion around, okay, we're doing something about this. We know what's going on. It's not some kind of weird secret. We are trying to do this, and here's how.
Yeah.
because it makes them feel more comfortable if they know that something's being done.
There's a plan. Yeah.
There's a plan. So when you're actually in the conversation, stay calm, focus on the facts, using the positive language and then being realistic. Don't say, oh, you know, we're not having a holiday this year, or we're not, you know, we're having to downsize, but I'm sure we can get a big house another. Just stay with the facts and say, we've downsized. It's not a catastrophe. Mm. It's a smaller house. We can live in this smaller house, or we can, you know, whatever it is, whatever, even if you're dying inside thinking, I don't want to be doing this. Mm. It's about trying to find ways of being that in that moment.
Yeah.
And accepting that's where you are right now, not looking back.
Yeah, because they'll be worrying. I mean, there's nothing wrong with kids seeing that you're upset. I think that's a good thing sometimes, but that you're also okay.
Yes, absolutely. Because coming back to the point that I made where, you know, during the Troubles in Northern Ireland, where the mother, as long as the mother was okay, the child was okay. They do take their cues from you.
They do. It's then, and it's not just the thoughts, like I said before, it's their nervous system. They are sponges. They know how you're feeling before you know it yourself.
Yes. And let them steer the conversation. If they want to say to go off in one direction, don't say, no, we're talking about this. You know, if they're going, because it may be that they are really worried about something and they need to talk about it. Mm. Now, we may be offended when they say, yeah, but my friends won't come round now because we're not living in this big house. That's understandable. And so what we have to do is we have to put aside our own offence that, you know, well, what's wrong with this house? You know, what's wrong with what I'm providing? Because it feels like an attack, a really deeply personal attack.
It's their response.
It's their response and their discomfort. And so you just say, well, if they're your true friends, we know that you could be in a field together and it would be fun. Mm. And if it really matters that much to them, then here's what you should say to them. Mm. You know, give them some words to use with their friends and say, you know what, mate, is that all that matters to you? Yeah. Come on, we can and find somewhere else to go. Or, right? Yeah.
They may have other worries or other angers or, you know, maybe grieving themselves. There may be lots of things that come up and allowing all of it.
Yes. And just acknowledge it. Don't be offended. It's about not being offended when they say something that triggers you and you think, no, because you think that's what everybody must be thinking. You know, just you let them say it.
I understand why you think that. And this is how we're going to manage it.
Yeah. And then afterwards, be a good role model. Show your children that while money is something you have to consider every day, it doesn't have to be something you obsess over. Mm. And again, I know that's easy because if you are in the middle of a crisis, your body will and everything will be wanting to focus on that. Check in on your teenager to make sure they feel safe and happy. Encourage them to practice self-care and just keep that subject open. So that, you know, coming back to this whole being able to talk about things, which is what you're so good at, this allowing people to feel the things they're feeling and saying to them, okay, I know we've had a conversation about it, but you know, if you think about something else and you just want to come back to me, it's open. It's open. I can't say I've got all the answers and I can't change where we're at because we are where we're at and we can either feel terrible about it and look back to the past and think, oh, it was so much better then. Or what we can do is think, right, you're going up a chimney to earn me some money.
I was just about to say, also, it's really important to make them not feel it's their responsibility to fix
it. It's not their responsibility, no.
Both on a practical level. It's the same as when you know, when people get divorced or other big life changes. It's, I think often kids, you know, they see their parents suddenly a bit vulnerable and they feel they want to help, they want to fix all in a practical way.
Yes.
But also in an emotional way. I mean, they can show empathy and be caring. That's really lovely. But it's not their job to fix you or the situation.
No, like, please don't be worrying about this. You do you and the stuff that's very important at your age. I'll fix this situation and do what we can.
Give me a hug. That would be nice.
and also, but don't exclude them from coming up with suggestions for how things can work. Absolutely. You know, they may say, well, maybe if we move to this area and you haven't been thinking about it because you thought they wouldn't want to live there. Or, you know, let them have a voice.
Yeah. Or it can be empowering for them to feel that they're contributing in a really in a good way.
But tell them it's not their responsibility.
No, it's not their job.
If you found our podcast useful, do us a favor, click subscribe or even review us. You can review us on our website, send us an email or just social media, any of that stuff. Tell your friends, because we don't advertise. We don't have a budget for anything. Basically, we're doing this in our spare time.
Spread the word.
Our website now has everything in one place, so feel free to rummage around there and message us with any of your questions or tips for topics to cover. You can also reach us via Facebook, Instagram. We read everything. Now, in our next episode, we'll look at the impact on our families when our teenagers finally leave home. Dun, dun, dun. Now, it's known to have triggered a mental breakdown in mothers, particularly. So when you wave off your firstborn, will you rub your hands, skip back into the house and plan some exciting new adventure, or will you be consumed with grief? Where are we sitting on this spectrum? Because, you know, it's all valid. Some people are feeling differently. I've seen parents who can't wait, and I've seen parents who are just, you know, in fact, I was talking to a lady the other day who said, you know, when her son says he's really excited about moving out and going and getting his, you know, being at university and having digs and stuff. And she was like, and I just said, but be proud that you're raising a child who's excited about their future. Yeah. This is amazing.
And we can be both.
We can
mourn they've gone, and we can be excited.
Yes. And there's a new phase, and I can speak from experience because I have two bonus daughters who I've known since they were two and nearly six. And the truth is, they're back. We talk. they need support and love. And actually, they tell me the gossip and we have fun and it's great. So they don't completely leave you unless they're a male and you're screwed. No, I'm joking.
What?
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. That's not, it's not true at all. maybe I'll cut that out. also, Alex raised the issue of manners. I was having a walk with her the other day. She's the person who came up with the idea of a podcast. She wanted me to do something.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I loved it. And so manners, what different cultures expect of their teens. Mm. She's French English. And she said, you know, the French are very, very different. You turn up at a party, kiss, kiss to every single person, every single person. And you have a conversation and then you're allowed to kind of move on. Yeah. And she said, you know, these English kids turn up and they basically just air her.
You're lucky if you get a fist bump.
Get a fist bump, yes. So what are we instilling in our teenagers in terms of manners? Do they matter?
Mm,
why do they matter?
Very interesting.
Where do we find the manners from? Mm. Do we listen to other people and say, oh, I like that? Mm. Or do we just go, nope, this is how it's done?
Mm, interesting.
Right? Interesting.
So about that.
That's it for now. Don't forget to subscribe, as I said before. And you can reach Susie by her own website, which has a new name now, which is
mindful-life.co.uk. Whole new website. Go and
whole new website. It's fabulous. Fabulous. Lots of photos. You can see her. And until next time, goodbye.
Bye-bye for now.